Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you aboard as we plow forward into another week. Plowing here in Denver. Everybody gets a snow day here in Denver as we got about, not a foot of snow on the ground, but a good bit of snow on the ground. Everybody's staying home, giving me extra time to prepare for this week's broadcast. We want to start in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's from the Los Angeles Times. One of the victims in a pre-dawn shooting and crash on the Las Vegas Strip has been identified as Kenneth Cherry Jr., an aspiring rapper known as Kenny Clutch. Do we have any of his records? We don't. His attorney said his death was shocking. Since when is the death of an aspiring rapper shocking? Well, the L.A. Times story goes on to quote a number of people, including his lawyer and his dad. They say he was a wonderful person, a fine young man who didn't have a criminal history. His dad says the world has lost a good man. According to the L.A. Times, aspiring rapper Kenny Clutch did have several arrests in Oakland and Berkeley, many for gun charges. He was a fine young man. Now, apparently, the fellow who shot him was even a worse degenerate. They're looking for him, tattoos on his neck, and one of those tear tattoos by his eye. Mm. You know what that means, right? It used to mean that he had killed someone. Well, and now he's killed, I forget if it was three or four people. Anyway, he was a rapist, the killer in this case, who should have been executed quite some time ago by authorities out in Nevada, or California, wherever he committed all of his crimes. But he was not, and therefore another incident of the death penalty being redirected at the innocent. And by the innocent, I mean the taxi driver and the young lady who was in the taxi that burst into flames. Another tragedy brought to you by the broken justice system here in America. All right, now, from one well-known degenerate, that is the killer in this case, from one well-known degenerate whose sins will precede him to judgment, to another whose sins will be revealed later, Mitt Romney's in the news. Yes, Mitt Romney will make his first speech since the 2012 election debacle. A debacle is my word. This is from Newsmax. And guess where Mitt Romney is going to be allowed to speak? You guessed it. He'll be at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, in Washington in March. He is expected to make remarks about national affairs and the future of the conservative movement. Mitt Romney, on the future of the conservative movement, I think he'll open with, well, I think I've just about killed it. Thank you very much, Mr. Romney. Let's see. Newsmax reports that Romney has yet to offer a public critique of Barry's second term or advice on the way forward for Republicans. Now, who would possibly listen to Mitt Romney for advice on a way forward for the Republican Party? Oh, that's right. The Republicans are still listening to Karl Rove, so they very well may listen to Mitt Romney. Romney has a long history at the CPAC conference, according to Newsmax. He's won several CPAC straw polls. And a chairman there at the American Conservative Union, which organizes the CPAC conference, said they're looking forward to hearing Romney's views on the future of the conservative movement. Yeah.
Why they asking him?
Well, it's CPAC. They're hell-bent on destroying the conservative movement. So Mitt Romney would be an appropriate keynote speaker. You know, the CPAC speakers list has become nothing more than a list of completely sold-out, compromised establishment liberals. Yeah. Who else is going to be there? Who else have they corrupted? Well, they've got Paul Ryan, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker to be joined by former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, all cheap liberals. That's right, a Republican, a modern Republican, is just a cheap liberal. They will all agree to avoid talk of morality or any touchy social issues. But you can always count on them to stand up and speak about your money and your guns. They're cheap liberals. They want to keep their money, and they want to help you keep your money, but they don't want to actually be conservatives. Just embarrassing CPAC, what it has devolved into. Now, from Mitt Romney and CPAC and the death of the conservative movement, we move to a man at the forefront, at the vanguard of the destruction of everything that is conservative. This is from the Bad Religion file, and it regards one Bill O'Reilly. Okay? Bill O'Reilly apparently has signed a deal with a publishing house to write a book called Killing Jesus, A History. Yeah. You may remember that Bill O'Reilly has made quite a bit of money and headlines with his recent best-selling books about killing Kennedy and killing Lincoln. The book, Killing Jesus, by Bill O'Reilly, appropriately enough, will be published in September by Henry Holt Publishers. Martin Dugard will be the real author. Will be O'Reilly's co-author on the project. In Killing Jesus, O'Reilly, quote, will account the seismic political and historic events, unquote, that made the death of the beloved and controversial young revolutionary known as Jesus of Nazareth inevitable. A revolutionary, Bill? Jesus Christ? A revolutionary? Jesus Christ was the ultimate conservative, Mr. O'Reilly, something you would not have any idea how to recognize. What does Bill have to say here? Bill is going to talk about Jesus Christ here, and this could be blasphemous. Just quoting Bill O'Reilly talking about Jesus could be considered blasphemy, but we're going to go ahead and quote him because the news is what it is. Yeah, Bill says, quote, Jesus Christ has not walked among us physically for more than 2,000 years. Yet his presence today is felt the world over, and his spirit is worshipped by more than 2 billion people. That was unquote. That was in a statement released by O'Reilly's publisher. Bill goes on to say, he puts on his theologian hat, Jesus' teachings, his legacy, his life as a flesh and blood man, and his death created the world in which we live. At which point someone said, well, what about his resurrection, Bill? You left out the part about his resurrection. Hello, Mr. O'Reilly. Anyway, if Jesus actually watches Bill O'Reilly's show, which is highly doubtful, right? You know, at some point, if Jesus was watching Bill O'Reilly, he's got to be saying, Bill, are you trying to be a conservative? Please. Come on, Bill. Come on, O'Reilly. You're killing me. Unquote. Anyway, Bill O'Reilly, give me a break. His sins precede him to judgment as well. All right, so from the Bad Religion file and Bill O'Reilly and his real author, Martin Dugard, we'll jump to the Good Religion file. This is a fairly inspirational story, as tragic as it is. This is from WorldNet Daily. An American pastor jailed in Iran's notorious Evin prison for preaching the Christian faith says prison authorities have subjected him to horrific pressures and psychological warfare, including death threats. You remember we have reported extensively on the persecution and incarceration of Pastor Saeed Abedini, and he's written the first letter he's been allowed to send since his conviction and sentencing back in January. The 32-year-old Christian pastor reports that conditions in the prison are so very difficult that my eyes get blurry, my body does not have the strength to walk, and my steps become very weak and shaky. He says he is constantly under pressure to abandon Christianity. He says that officials at the prison, he says they are only waiting for one thing, for me to deny Christ. But in his letter, he says this, quote, "This is my message for the church. Stay strong for his glory. He will come back soon. Be with God and give your best efforts to his kingdom." That's pretty inspirational. We'll be sending up prayers for Pastor Abedini, as we have been since we first learned of his plight. Now, according to WorldNet Daily, last week, more than 80 members of Congress, in a bipartisan move, sent a letter to Secretary of State John Kerry, urging the new secretary to exhaust every possible option to secure Mr. Abedini's immediate release. Okay. And so, shall we follow up on Secretary Kerry's efforts? Well, I think that will be very difficult to do, since Mr. Kerry has no intention or no motivation to help Mr. Abedini, and who will probably languish in an Iranian prison for some time to come. All the while, though, glorifying God. And I wouldn't hold my breath if I were the Iranians waiting for Mr. Abedini to deny Jesus Christ, because it sounds like Mr. Abedini is well-grounded in his faith, and we give glory to God for that. It is inspirational. Prayers for you, Mr. Abedini. Now, let's move on to the war file. According to a report from WABC in New York City, Yusuf Ibrahim, a 28-year-old Muslim, was taken into custody last week after two bodies were found. Investigators allege that Ibrahim killed his victims, then severed their heads and hands and buried the remains in the backyard of a home in Buena Vista, New Jersey. Mr. Ibrahim, as I mentioned, is a Muslim, and the victims were from the Coptic Christian community in the area. One of the victims had come from Egypt not many years ago. Friends of the victims wonder if the motive had something to do with religion. The report said the police described the suspect as ruthless and calculating and said that he belongs behind bars. Well, that's a shame if the police, who are basically our first line of defense against uncivilization, Islamic and otherwise, it's unfortunate that the police actually believe he belongs behind bars. After severing the heads and hands of his two murder victims, he doesn't belong behind bars, he belongs underground. Frankly, and the police should know that better than anyone. Authorities indicated that the suspect, Mr. Yusuf Ibrahim, was found driving a white Mercedes-Benz that belonged to one of the victims. So is it religion? Is it a religious crime? Is it just a criminal act? Well, I would posit the notion that Islam is both. It's a criminal religion, frankly. And if you talk to some of our troops who've served over there for any period of time, they will let you know that the Islamic fanatics running the jihad over in the Middle East are nothing more than criminal gangs. Islam is a criminal religion. And when criminal behavior is tolerated, or in the case of Islam, feared, I mean, it's tolerated here in America, criminal behavior, tolerated and celebrated. And in the Middle East, Islam, the criminal religion, is feared. Well, when that happens, it can come to dominate a culture and even end up running governments, which it has done in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, and countries throughout the Middle East. Criminals, in the guise of a false pagan religion, end up running the government and making war and terror upon the earth. And I think our tolerance, well, has hopefully run its course, but I don't see things getting any better, frankly. Until the Iranians nuke something, I'm afraid that the secular humanist powers of the the former West are simply not going to comprehend the severity of the situation. Back, it's the Weekly World View. And what did we just come off of? Oh yes, and tolerance of criminality, all of that. Well, let's move from criminal religion to criminal government, and we need go no further than right here in the state of Colorado. It's from the Culture File from 9 News in Colorado, Dateline, Denver. Colorado lawmakers have given initial approval to repealing the state's adultery law. Yes, adultery, according to 9 News, is still a crime in Colorado, but some Democratic lawmakers say it's an outdated 19th century holdover that no longer has a purpose. Well, proving the relatively limited worldview of certain Democrat lawmakers, it's not a 19th century holdover, it's a 19th century BC holdover. I mean, if you really want to get into the specifics of the laws against adultery, they were laid down, more than a couple hundred years ago, gentlemen and ladies. Although this is a man. Who's the guy who introduced this? Is this in the story? Denver Democrat Rep. Daniel Kagan is the sponsor of the bill to eradicate adultery laws in Colorado. He says having the laws could lead to a violation of people's privacy, at which point his wife must have said, well, wait a second. Your privacy, Dan? What exactly are you talking about? Actually, I don't know who Daniel Kagan is. My guess is he's not married. Yeah. So I know that, by the way, in the story, adultery, he says, is illegal in Colorado but carries no criminal penalty. So we know that adultery was decriminalized some time ago, but the law remains on the books. And this is the thing about liberals. Anything that even possibly points to the idea that there is absolute right and wrong must be completely removed from the public square. It can't just be decriminalized. Nope. The Daniel Kagan and the other demonocrats, and I'm sure there are more than a few Republicans who will sign on and vote yes. They don't even want the idea that adultery was ever illegal to be on the books. I watched a story about this on 9 News, which is our local television news here, NBC affiliate. And it was Orwellian in the way that the news reporters compared the law in Colorado against adultery to horse and buggy laws and various laws that are obviously outdated and useless. It was Orwellian in the delivery, in the way this law was set up. And, you know, if you were to ask any given person on the street under 30 if adultery ever was illegal or should be illegal, well, they wouldn't think it should be illegal, and they would certainly not know that it ever was illegal. And so I think having this law on the books at least gives us an opportunity, perhaps, to revive it someday. But in the removal of the law from the books, we just take one more step closer to the rim of hell here in Colorado. Daniel Kagan, the Denver Democratic representative, his bill, his proposed law, or his repeal, his proposed repeal, would also repeal the related crime of contributing to sexual immorality by providing a place for unmarried people to shack up. So it used to be that if you rolled up to a motel on East Colfax and you weren't married, people running the motel would be hesitant to rent you a room because there was a law on the books prohibiting them from contributing to sexual immorality. At which point the voters of Colorado said, huh, what's sexual immorality? What's that? Anyway, according to this Democrat, almost half of the United States still have adultery laws, and that seems to stick in his craw. Anyway, so there you have it. Colorado. Yeah, I know. I know we're the epicenter of everything that's destroying Western civilization. Another story is from the Associated Press. Dateline, Denver, Colorado. Under a recommendation made last Tuesday by a state task force, marijuana tourism apparently will be considered in the methodology of regulating the now legal marijuana here in Colorado. The task force was assembled by the governor and the legislature to suggest regulations for pot. How are we gonna do this? Okay, they set up a task force. Hopefully they didn't allow any potheads on the task force. Probably never get anything done. The task force has agreed that the constitutional amendment on marijuana in Colorado simply says that adults over 21 can use the drug, not just Colorado residents. So that if lawmakers agree with the recommendations of the task force, tourists would be free to buy and smoke marijuana when they come out to Colorado. That's great. That's what you need. Skiing, trees, and stone people. That's what we need in Colorado. The task force said that imposing residency requirements would almost certainly create a black market for marijuana, said one Denver Democrat. Well, news to the Democrat legislature here in Colorado. Your taxing of marijuana is bound to create a black market. And now that it's legal, nobody's going to be afraid to sell it out of the back of their truck or whatever. Because, well, it's legal. And who's going to want to pay the 50% tax? Do you think any dope dealer wants to pay a 50% tax on the dope that he deals, Mr. Democrat? No. So anyway, we're going to have tourism out here, all right. Let's see here. Now, the task force wisely had concerns that marijuana tourism could open the door for traffickers to load up and take marijuana across state borders for illegal sale. So the task force, in their eminent wisdom, agreed that non-residents should only be able to buy limited amounts of marijuana, maybe as little as an eighth of an ounce at a time. I sure am glad that the Democrats are up there. Taking care of us and our visitors here in Colorado. You know, how do people get this idea? Hey, let's legalize immorality. Let's regulate it and profit from it. I mean, eventually everyone dies, but we'll have one hell of a ride. Unquote, Satan. That's where we are here in Colorado. It'll be interesting to see. I watched Fox News, some program last week of a bunch of alleged conservative men who were discussing Colorado's grand experiment with pot legalization, and they all agreed that it's an experiment, that's time has come, and it has to happen so that we can learn if this is something that can be duplicated in the other states. And so Colorado... Oh. Now, who's that? Okay. Is this what you think, Colorado? Oh, yeah. I do feel scared. All right. Yeah, we're throwing it all away. No, no, Howard, I don't think it'll only get better. I don't. Okay, Howard, go away. My extremely attractive audio engineer. hitting me with a groove. I had to stop and groove on that for just a second. Even though that was the kind of music I would not allow on my tape deck in the 80s. Nope. No keyboards. Nope. No heterosexually questionable singers allowed. Thank you very much. But no, it's not going to get better, ladies and gentlemen. This grand experiment out here in Colorado, endorsed by Satan and George Soros and their ilk, it's going to throw it all away, as Howard so wisely stated. It's sad to see what's happening out here. Let's see. Oh, we got another one from Colorado from the politics file. This is related to the latest brouhaha in gun control. This is from a college newspaper or something. I don't know. The University of Colorado Department of Public Safety has updated an online statement advising female students to consider a variety of unusual actions if they're attacked, including vomiting, urinating, or claiming that they're menstruating. They did this just hours. The update was made just hours after the Colorado House, Democrat House, passed a package of gun control bills that would make it illegal for people with concealed weapons permits to carry guns on college campuses or at public universities. So instead of packing some heat, young college girls are urged to vomit, urinate, and, they could also run away without looking back and yell, hit, or bite your attacker. Well, I support the last three, yell, hit, and bite. But I like yell, hit, bite, draw, aim, fire. I think that's a much better strategy if you're being attacked. What else do they advise young women to do who now have been disarmed on the college campuses here in Colorado? Tell your attacker that you have a disease. Well, the nice thing about that on a college campus in Colorado is the girl at least wouldn't be lying. These less conventional methods for fighting off a would-be rapist are apparently part of the Rape Aggression Defense System, which is a class that the school's public safety department promotes as a means for female students to boost their self-defense skills. And that's an admirable and laudable goal, to try to help young women to protect themselves from the young men that the educational system has taught are animals. So when you teach young men that they're animals and that there is no God, there is no judgment day, and that the strong should dominate the weak, incidents of rape tend to increase. And so the college, the public education system here in Colorado, has wisely taken that into account and set up instructions, lessons for girls on how to protect themselves from the monsters created by the government education system. Let's see, do we have comments here? Democrat State Representative Joe Salazar made comments last week during the gun control bills debate, arguing that students should not have access to guns to protect themselves from being raped. He says that's why we have call boxes. That's why we have safe zones and whistles. Whistles, he said. Because you just don't know who you're going to be shooting at. And you don't know if you feel like you're going to be raped or if you feel like someone's been following you around, or you feel like you're in trouble when you may actually not be in trouble. And then you pop out that gun and you pop around at somebody. Unquote. That's what this state representative said. This shows the shallow understanding of self-defense. Anyone who's taken the concealed carry class here in Colorado that's required if you do want to carry a firearm, a large portion of the class is devoted to instructing you just exactly when to pull your gun and making you extremely aware of the fact that when you do fire a round at someone, by the way, the author here wrote, pop around, A-R-O-U-N-D, pop around at somebody, instead of pop a round. These people have they've never shot a gun, never fired a weapon in their life, and they're writing a story. And I don't know what to pop around someone. What is that? Do some kind of dance? listening to MC Hammer, you could pop around someone. But if you're going to be raped, it's advisable to pop around at someone. But anyway, what was I about to say? I was going to say something deep and meaningful, but the pop around thing got me off track. So I guess safe zones, call boxes, whistles, urinate, defecate, vomit, claim you have chlamydia, all because now you've been disarmed.
She's got the jack. 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 Jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack.
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney. Stepping up in complete disagreement with State Representative Joe Salazar. Who was the other guy? Let's go back here. The guy who wants to repeal the laws against adultery. I'm in complete disagreement with Representative Daniel Kagan. I'm with his wife, if he has one, against all of that. All right, now, on to the personhood file. Let's see here. I've got my stories out of order. This is something I should have taken care of before going on the air. But this is a story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark Jr. went on a radio show last week and warned of a second American revolution if cops have to enforce the legalization of child killing. Yes. He said that he would not allow any abortions to be performed or any innocent people to be murdered, even if ordered to do so by executive order. And he said it could be a second American revolution. Oh, wait a minute. He wasn't talking about the legalization of murdering children. He was talking about confiscation of guns. So he says there's going to be a second American revolution if you order the police to confiscate guns. Now, this sheriff allows abortion clinics and OBGYNs to operate freely in Milwaukee and in the entire county, killing hundreds and thousands of innocent people every year. But when it comes to gun control, he's warning of a second American revolution. That's right. He says he wouldn't seize anybody's guns, even if he was ordered to do so by executive order. But he does allow the murder of innocent people in his jurisdiction. There's the state of law enforcement there at the top. What does he say here? First of all, he says, to me, ordering police to confiscate guns would be an act of tyranny. So the people in Milwaukee County do not have to worry about me enforcing some sort of order. Like an order that says the killing of innocent people is legal. A bit hypocritical on the part of the brave sheriff there in Milwaukee. He continued, the reason he doesn't want to confiscate guns is that he doesn't want to get shot. Yeah, he says he believes that if somebody tried to enforce something of that magnitude, i.e. seizure of weapons, he says you would see the coming of an American revolution, the likes of which would make the first revolution pale by comparison. And while I do not agree with the larger point that confiscation of weapons here in America would definitely trigger, well, troublesome times, don't get me wrong, I do have a problem with the hypocrisy of law enforcement officials at the highest levels of power allowing innocent people to be butchered in their jurisdiction, but finally drawing the line when it comes to their own safety. See, Mr. Milwaukee Sheriff, he doesn't want to get shot going into Joe Sixpack's house trying to confiscate his handguns. But he will allow the weakest and the most innocent of the citizens he's sworn to protect to be murdered there in his jurisdiction. See, I was looking for a brave sheriff, and I'm afraid maybe there isn't any anymore. I think your average street cop is a friend and someone we can rely on and count on in times of trouble. But I'm afraid the sheriffs are all politicians. And, I mean, once you've acceded to the idea that innocent people can be killed in your jurisdiction, it must become very difficult to enforce other laws, like, you know, against jaywalking, traffic violations and whatnot. Well, but here we are. The only solution, I'm afraid at this point, is the impending return of Jesus Christ. I don't see any other solution to the problem. I don't know that there's a sheriff out there to be found who's going to stand with the innocent. I think they're willing to mouth the company line for the Republicans when it comes to gun control, but they've already neglected the more serious parts of the law. And they should enforce the lesser parts without leaving the greater parts undone. But that's what we've done. So that takes us naturally to the domestic tranquility file. Little story this week out of Orange County, California. One woman was shot and killed in Ladera Ranch, and authorities said the killer then carjacked three vehicles in and around Tustin. Two more people were killed in the carjackings. Two other people were wounded before the man stopped in Orange, walked out of his car, and shot himself. The killer, last report, was identified only as a man in his 20s. I barely even heard about this story. A madman on a rampage in Orange County, California. Just another day at the office here in America. Just sad. Sad what we've allowed. Sad what we've decided to tolerate. And speaking of gross tolerance, in fact, negligent tolerance, let's turn to the Los Angeles Times, a story out of Sacramento, California. Thousands of child molesters, rapists, and other high-risk sex offenders in California are removing or disarming their court-ordered GPS tracking devices. And some have been charged with new crimes, including sexual battery, kidnapping, and attempted manslaughter. You see, the offenders apparently can disable the GPS monitors, often with little risk of serving time for it. Why? Because the jails are too full to hold them. Yeah. Back in 2006, California voted to require that high-risk sex offenders be tracked for life with GPS monitors strapped to their bodies. Well, the sex offenders disagree, and they're taking them off and committing more crimes. One Fresno parole agent is quoted as saying, "This is a huge problem. If the public knew, they'd be shocked." Well, this is from the LA Times, so let's safely assume that the public now knows. Are they shocked? Is the public capable of being shocked anymore? Or have we all been lulled into the belief that we must tolerate a certain level of crime, chaos, murder, rape, and destruction in our midst? I think the latter. Here's what's happening in California, folks. You see, Governor Jerry Brown and the legislature out there, they've been forced to comply with court orders to reduce overcrowding in the state prisons. So when these convicted sex offenders who are on parole or probation, when they remove their GPS, well, there's simply nowhere to house them anymore because the courts have said there isn't enough. Well, because California doesn't have enough money to build the number of prisons necessary to facilitate the size of the criminal community that California has decided to tolerate. So this proves my other axiom that financial irresponsibility eventually leads to the death of people. It leads to crime and death, and therefore our politicians should be held to account for the death and destruction that their financial irresponsibility has brought upon us, or at least upon our brothers and sisters out there in California. But these parolees, these sex offenders, have little deterrent to taking off their GPS tracking monitors. And this parole agent says that they're... No, wait, this isn't the parole agent. This is an executive at the California Sex Offender Management Board. So you know your society's in trouble, ladies and gentlemen, when you have a sex offender management board as a part of your government. Anyway, the executive there says that the parolees, in violation of the GPS rules, are feeling more bold. One convicted child stalker, just as an example, one convicted child stalker was arrested 3 times in 2 months after skipping parole and was freed almost immediately each time. After his third release, his GPS alarm went off and he simply vanished. Well, the next day he turned up in a Stockton living room where a 15-year-old girl was asleep on the couch. He asked her if she wanted a date before he got scared and fled from the home. Authorities recaptured him in a local park. He's in custody now on new charges of child molestation. This proves my other axiom on how to track sex offenders. Because there's one thing that a sex offender cannot remove and freely travel about, and that's a headstone. That's the best way to track these bastards, in my opinion. All right? One more from the justice file, as if that wasn't dispiriting enough. A county judge, this is from CNN, a county judge has sentenced Drew Peterson to 38 years in prison for the murder of his third ex-wife, Kathleen Savio. We all remember the story, right? Drew Peterson, the smart aleck, who always smirked on his way to court, who knows how many wives this guy. He may have killed all three of his wives. Do we even know if his first wife is still alive? Anyway, he's going to get credit. He's been sentenced to 38 years for the murder of his third ex-wife. He was brought to public prominence when his fourth ex-wife, Stacy, disappeared back in October of 2007. Stacy Peterson has never been found, by the way. Peterson's lawyers have promised to press on with an appeal. They say he was wrongly convicted. His lawyer even says he was railroaded. Yeah. He'll get credit for the nearly 4 years that he's been in custody against the 38. I mean, the guy could definitely get out of prison. Now he... What's that now? It's shocking and unbelievable. He could have received as many as 60 years in prison under Illinois law. And the CNN article goes on to say that Illinois does not have a death penalty. To which I say, oh yeah? Ask the family of Kathleen Savio. Weekly World View. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And we go from a murderer sentenced to a few years in prison. Just a few years. Now we go to Florida for the other side of the coin. The ridiculous life of the American justice system. From Reuters, a Florida man posted photos on Facebook showing himself hugging a baby manatee and has been arrested on charges of harassing the endangered species. Yeah, he's been charged with a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $500 fine for hugging a manatee. In Florida, there's the Florida Manatee Sanctuary Act, which is a law written by brave politicians dedicated to justice, and it prohibits molesting, harassing, or disturbing a manatee. Yes, I know. I know. What can you say? What can you say about that? Now, we'll go to the economics file. From concerns that are right before us, the tolerance of criminals and criminal religion, to the aforementioned financial irresponsibility from the economics file. This is from Bloomberg. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke is minimizing concerns that the central bank's easy monetary policy has spawned economically risky asset bubbles. He minimized such concerns in comments at a meeting with dealers and investors this month. Dealers? Was he in Colorado? Talking with, no, this is financial instrument dealers, I do believe, at least for the moment. The Fed chairman brushed off the risks of asset bubbles. He simply brushed them off, and that's all he needs to do, apparently, is just brush off the concerns, because he's Ben Bernanke, he's the head of the Fed. And when he brushes things off, they're brushed off, and we need not worry about them any further. Bloomberg reports that speculation about scaled-back asset purchases by the Fed was fanned by the February 20th release of minutes of the central bank's last policy-making meeting last month. Many participants at the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, that's interesting, it's the Open Market Committee meeting, but the identities of everyone who participated are secret in the Open Market Committee meeting. Well, many participants expressed concerns about potential costs and risks arising from further asset purchases. What are you talking about, Doug? Asset purchases. Well, the Fed, at its January meeting, decided to continue buying $45 billion a month worth of treasuries and $40 billion a month in mortgage debt without setting a limit on the duration or the total size of the purchases. So the Fed buying treasuries, ladies and gentlemen, is basically the Fed printing money and then, I don't know, buying it back. I can't quite understand. The government issues debt and the Fed buys it. That's what happens. But none of it's real. The bottom line is they decided to print $45 billion a month and then buy another $40 billion a month in extremely risky mortgage debt. And they have, you know, there's no set limit on how much or how long they're going to do it. But they do assure us that inflation is projected to be no more than 2.5%. So concerns about inflation, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. Ben Bernanke has brushed them off. And once he brushes, well, they're brushed. And thank heaven, I was concerned that perhaps printing $45 billion of worthless fiat currency every month could have a negative or deleterious effect in the not-too-distant future on the economic life in America. But, well, I'll sleep better tonight knowing that Ben Bernanke assures me that inflation is going to be well under control and that, well, everything's going to be just fine, ladies and gentlemen. Just move on. There's nothing more to see here. Thank you, Mr. Bernanke. I was getting a little concerned, but I'm not an investment professional like yourself. All right, another one from the economics file. Barry has decided to move forward on climate change with or without Congress. We've got a quote from Mr. Ho. He says, if Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive actions we can take now and in the future to reduce pollution, prepare our communities for the consequences of climate change, and speed up the transition to more sustainable sources of energy. Barry. Barry. That's pretty presumptuous of you, Barry. Better watch yourself, Barry. I've tried goeth before a fall, Mr. Obama. America's favorite celebrity politician, Barry Ho, has said he's going to move forward with or without Congress, but U.S. News and World Report asks, what can Obama do? Well, the president has already gotten the ball rolling on a host of administrative actions. The Ho administration is already working unilaterally to curb emissions, but their biggest moves to date are imminent. A spokeswoman for the EPA says the agency is working to identify all the options it has available to reduce pollution and transition to sustainable energy sources. She says we're probably going to set up standards that any new power plant that's built in the U.S. has to achieve a certain carbon dioxide emissions rate per unit of energy produced. And U.S. News reports that those likely standards limiting emissions virtually eliminate the likelihood that any new coal-fired power plants will be built in the United States of America. With or without Congress, with or without the people, Barry Ho, America's favorite celebrity, he is a star, no doubt, is moving forward with or without you and I. And that takes us naturally to the politics file. Do I even want to do this story? Not really, but I'll do it. The People's Liberation Army has a unit based in Shanghai. They're called Unit 61398, and apparently they've been pointed out by a U.S. computer security company as participating in sustained attacks on a wide range of private industries in the West. The computer security expert company is called Mandiant, and Mandiant reports, quote, it's time to acknowledge the threat is originating in China. And we want to do our part to arm and prepare security professionals to combat that threat effectively. What is the threat? Well, it's economic cyber espionage and the theft of trade secrets. And it's been going on in a sustained fashion for many years. And now this computer company has isolated Unit 61398, located in Shanghai's Pudong District. That's China's financial and banking district. They say that this military unit is staffed by perhaps thousands of people proficient in English, as well as computer programming and network operations. Mandiant said in its report that the unit had stolen hundreds of terabytes of data from at least 141 organizations across a diverse set of industries, beginning as early as 2006. Information stolen ranged from details on mergers and acquisitions to emails from senior employees and trade secret information. And so a government that is broke and is focused on climate change and homosexual marriage is allowing the intellectual property of American private industry to be stolen right out from underneath us. And that's why anytime a new product comes out, within 5 minutes, it's being produced in China on the black market and sold all over the world, robbing hardworking American industrialists of probably billions of dollars. But that's what happens when your government is detached from morality and goes broke. But don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, the drones may save us from it all. It's not going to be your government. It's going to be the drones. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald. Remote-controlled drones that can record video footage are being sold in large retail stores for as little as $350. And a professor from the Melbourne Law School says the idea that private citizens can buy drones and record footage directly onto smartphones has serious privacy implications. He says there are infinite mischievous possibilities, which is exactly how you would expect the mind of a law professor to operate. The first thing a law professor thinks of is the devious and mischievous possibilities of all these drones. Now, I, on the other hand, have a far brighter outlook. I think that free enterprise, restrained and guided by Christian principles, can cause drones to be one of our greatest assets. Yeah, I think so. Now, you remember the meteor that sailed through the sky there in Russia and blew out all the windows? Do you know why so many dash cameras caught the meteor? Is because most people who drive in Russia have a dash cam to prevent the police from pulling them over and shaking them down. And so this dash cams, They also have infinite mischievous possibilities. But on the other hand, they keep the corrupt police there in Russia, at least as much as they're able, they keep them walking the line there, unable to shake down local citizens. But this law professor is quite worried about different things. He says, here's what the law professor at Melbourne University says. It doesn't take a genius to imagine flying a drone over your neighbor's lawn and capturing photos of them naked.
What?
Well, Mr. Law Professor, I'm certainly not a genius, but I would say that it takes, you know, a pervert or a lawyer to think of such a thing, if that's not a redundant statement. I don't know. If I'm out shopping for a drone, one of the things on my mind is not flying over my neighbor's house and capturing photos of them in any state of dress, frankly. But as a law professor, I'm sure his mind works on a different track than the average citizen. The Australian Privacy Commissioner says that it's concerning that this type of equipment can be easily purchased without any limitation on their use. Well, I mean, what limitation would you suggest, Mr. Privacy Commissioner? I mean, you've already said that you've thrown out any idea of God or fundamental right or wrong or morality out of the public square. So what limitations do you suggest we could have on the drones, Mr. Privacy Commissioner? Well, now there are no limitations. And the education systems throughout the West, stripped bare of any sense of morality, have raised a generation that will have no limitations. And they probably will be flying them over their neighbor's house trying to do exactly what the law professor suggested first came to his mind. Let's see. One city council member there in Australia. By the way, this is from the Sydney Morning Herald. Did I mention that? Australian newspaper. City council member says that rapidly evolving technology is constantly creating new opportunities to have the possibility of encroaching our privacy. He says it's something that's very difficult to make laws against, let alone enforce. I think we all have to be mindful of each other's privacy and take responsibility for protecting what we all value. Well, Mr. Student Council Member, I'm afraid that this is the big problem in the post-Christian world that you've constructed. There are no commonly shared values anymore. What do we all value? Well, it's an open question now. And for your neighbor, it might be flying a drone over your house and taking pictures of you. And that's where we are, thanks to folks like this student council member, the entire government of Australia, the United States, Britain, France, the Netherlands. Is there anyone I missed? The entire Western world. When you abandon morality and undermine a belief in Judgment Day, well, then that eventually the technology will not be used for good. It'll be used for ill. And, that's where you've put us. All right. Now, getting close to the end here. Oh, yeah, we're getting close to the end. This is from the, speaking of the end, this is from the This Is the End file. San Francisco, from McClatchy News, Vaughn Walker is the judge who struck down California's ban on homosexual perverted deviant marriage. He's speaking now. You'll remember Vaughn Walker. He, according to McClatchy, he quietly but openly was involved in a longtime homosexual relationship with a doctor as he sat in judgment of California's Proposition 8, which banned perverted, disgusting homosexual marriage. He says he was mulling retirement when the Prop 8 lawsuit landed on his desk. And now the Prop 8 showdown has reached the U.S. Supreme Court, which will hear arguments in March and will no doubt legalize homosexual marriage nationwide in June. Ironically, June, heterosexuals' favorite month to get married. That'll be the month when we here at The Worldview predict that the Supreme Court will, in the manner of Roe versus Wade, issue an opinion that homosexual marriage should be legal. And governing officials throughout the land will feel that they must operate now under that opinion of an illegitimate court. In a case that was put on track to go to the Supreme Court by a homosexual out in California. Pretty shocking. Let's see here. Vaughn Walker, the homo, retired from the federal bench after finishing the Prop 8 case, and he now practices law and does some teaching at Stanford and UC Berkeley law schools. Over the objection of Prop 8 backers, Vaughn Walker, homosexual, ordered a full trial in the case of Proposition 8 to establish a complete record on the arguments from both sides, aware that higher courts would review whatever he decided. He says, quote, if you're going to have an issue that deals with a significant constitutional matter, it pays to have some facts that are established in the old-fashioned way, unquote. Well, not too old-fashioned. I mean, the guy's a homosexual, for crying out loud. But to Walker's surprise, after lawyers for the same-sex couples put on a parade of witnesses, gay marriage foes put on scant evidence, offering just two witnesses, including one who later came out in favor of same-sex marriage. Vaughn Walker says, I did think the proponents of Proposition 8 would put on a case. But they, and then his voice trailed off. They didn't. Do you remember the Prop 8 case? Do you remember the homosexuals had witnesses day after day after day, reams and reams of paper consumed by the stenographer on the testimony from the proponents of homosexual marriage? But the backers of Proposition 8 had nary a case to make. Why? Well, you can't put on a case against immorality without God, okay? And number one, Mr. Walker and other jurists, God is not respected in your court. He's not respected by the majority of the citizens either, but he's certainly not respected in your court. And so the pool of potential jurors drawn from the unwashed masses wouldn't respect God either. But secondly, and more important, I believe, is that the backers of Proposition 8 sought to establish normal marriage without God. Yeah, they tried to establish the case that marriage between one man and one woman should be the law, but they chose to do it without referencing God or morality. And that's why they lost their case in California. That's why they will lose their case at the Supreme Court. And that's why the modern Republican Party will lose the nation and will lose the culture if they're not destroyed and replaced with someone who's not afraid to make reference to the only argument for normal marriage. And that is that there is a creator God who created the male and female from the beginning, and that a man should be the husband of one wife. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, reason number 670, not to send your children to the public schools. We go to Marietta, Georgia. Marietta public schools have added panic buttons to their schools. These panic buttons will immediately place a call to 911 when they're pushed by school officials. So they're so afraid, ladies and gentlemen, of the monsters they've created through the government education system that now the teachers and administrators have to wear panic buttons. Once a panic button is pushed, a police officer says, we send everybody we have on the police force to the school until we can determine what the exact cause of the threat is. This is all a result, according to CBS in Atlanta, of updated safety plans after the Newtown school massacre. Other schools are also using panic buttons. Teachers and staff at the Orange Beach Elementary School in Alabama wear panic buttons around their necks in case of an emergency. Forget I've fallen and I can't get up. They're going to hit their panic button and say, one of the students who we taught evolved from nothing and who is going to nothing, and who we taught the Darwinian theory that the strong must dominate the weak. One of those students is in the school with a gun. We've hit the panic button. Our chickens have come home to roost, and we've hit the panic button. Anyway, once the panic button is pushed, the school goes into lockdown. Students are locked inside their classrooms. So that's reason 670, to never allow the government to get their hooks into your kids through the government godless education system. I guess that's it, ladies and gentlemen, for the Weekly Worldview this week. I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, at KGOV.com, at Theology Online. Thank my friends at Personhood USA and American Right to Life. And of course, I thank my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.